Now we've got a singer later on from Grey Stones, but in the meantime we've got a group of, I don't know where we got them, but we dragged them in for the 11.05 this morning, and they are Sean Duke, the cool scientist. Hi, Sean.
Hi, Declan, how are you?
Good morning. Good morning. How cool are you today?
I am cool enough now. It's, it could be warmer, but I'm still cool.
Very good. Ian Davis from the Pure Project, and of course, I have to ask, how pure are you?
Extremely pure, as always. Handing out Christmas calendars at the moment, so happy Christmas.
Yeah, and very nice too, and thank you for that. I'll explore that later on. And Tom Fortune, independent councillor, what can I say about you?
Question. make sure it's all good.
Well, listen, we've all men today. We had all women a few weeks ago, so don't be getting on to us and say about balance and things. It balances out over weeks and things. But you're all very welcome. Thanks for coming in. And of course, we talk about the stories of the week and we hear their opinions. And this week, how about clamp down on restricted breeds of dogs? How about Leo Varadkar earlier this week saying he would support Gardaí in Ireland being armed? A 4-day week, where would you fancy that? And what do you look at Christmas on the television? Well, let's go to the first one there. Earlier this week, a 9-year-old boy in Wexford was left with life-changing injuries after being mauled by a pit bull while out playing on the local green with some friends. The shocking incident led to concerns over the enforcement of the law against restricted dog breeds in Ireland. And we spoke to Senator Malcolm Byrne on the programme in the last couple of days, and he was calling for stricter laws and better enforcement when it comes to restricted breed of dogs. But some people said the dogs are not to blame, but bad owners are to blame, and the dog should not have been destroyed. So what do we think? Yourself first, Sean, about the nature of dogs in science, I suppose.
Yeah, well, the problem with these dogs, I think, is that they're bred for aggression. You know, like all dogs come from the wolf, so, which is amazing, and they're so different. But I find these dogs, some of them, very, very intimidating when I'm walking around where I live, if you see them. I've no problem with dogs that are nice, cuddly, friendly ones, but these kind of muscular attack dogs, I think, are pretty intimidating. And if they're intimidating me and I'm big enough, what's it like for other people on the road, like little old ladies, etc.? So I think, yes, they have to be very, very much restricted. I'm not sure that we should allow them here at all. If they are, they have to be really, you know, very severe penalties, because you can see what can happen. They're literally bred to attack, to kill. I don't know why people would want them as pets, to be honest. Now, I have to say, I don't have a dog, so, you know, I'm not anti-dog. I like dogs, but not that particular kind of dog.
Yeah, some people say it's, you know, you're casting aspersions on the entire breed of dog rather than individual dogs that could be nice and cuddly of that breed. Yeah. But there was a follow-up to that story in one of the newspapers this morning that dog should not have been in the housing estate where it was. There was actually a specific ban on dogs like that in the estate, and this was a breach. So you could say the dogs are fine, but the humans interpreting the laws or flouting the laws was the problem.
Yeah, but if they're doing that kind of damage to a child, we have to be really careful. I mean, they're lethal, potentially. So, you know, you're talking about guns as well. I think there's no need for them, to be honest. But if we're going to have them, they have to be very, very carefully monitored, if we're going to allow them at all. That would be my view.
Yeah, Ian, dogs in the countryside, of course, we know. You know, in the places that you go around to with the Pure Project, there's been incidents. And
absolutely, they have an adverse effect. But like in reality, it goes back to the owner responsibility. We have an act, dog regulations, control of dogs, and that actually is the onus is on the owner themselves in relation to dogs and looking after the dogs. And that's in all aspects, where the dog has to have a collar, microchipped, it has to, people looking, making sure the dog's not fouling, barking and dog straying. And we have at this present time a clause within the Control of Dog Acts, and that is in relation to restricted breeds. And within that, there is an act in that actually states that the owner is responsible. But it also says that a dog within, there's 11 types of breeds within that. And they have to be muzzled in public areas. They have to be, the person looking after the dog has to be over 16. And they have to be in a short lead. So if those acts were actually enforced, we wouldn't have this situation.
So the dogs would be fine. But these laws that go with them have to be utilised by the owners.
They do, and it is the owner's responsibility.
But there's no enforcement, seemingly, from what people tell us. There's absolutely no enforcement and no consequences for not adhering to them.
Well, I agree, and if there was consequences, then people would probably adhere to them. You would hope that they'd adhere to them, because in reality, any dog can be vicious and any dog can be dangerous, but it is the owner that's responsibility to ensure that the dog is not that way.
You know, Tom?
Yeah, Declan, I would agree with what Sean and Ian have said. I think there should be, to answer the question directly to you, I think there should be a clampdown. I do think that there's a big responsibility on owners, and you'd have to ask the question as well in regards to the animal. Is it fair that animals like that are crossbred and then allowed into housing estates? I think to have an animal like that in a housing estate is an absolute disgrace. The problem then is, how do you supervise it? How do you control it? The problem with it is that there isn't enough dog catchers or dog officers or whatever the case may be in the system. So there tends to be then kind of a, when we haven't got the resources to do it type of thing. And the danger to young kids, I mean, if I'm living in a housing estate of 20, 30, 40 houses, and there's a dog like that that can get out or can get, well, my God, and that would frighten the life out of me. And get, and then all of these dogs also are listed on a list of banned dogs, and they're all named. So I really think that the owners have got to take responsibility. Where I live, I walk regularly, and I'm astounded by the amount of dogs I meet that are off lead. And most dogs are, we had a dog ourselves at home, but most dogs are fine. But you get the odd dog who will run at people and frighten people, and that shouldn't be allowed.
Yeah, the difficulty with the nomination of the breeds is there can be crossbred.
Yeah, that's a part of the big problem. And when you actually look at it, I mean, if you crossbreed certain dogs, as I understand it, I mean, they become, as Sean says, they become an attack dog. So unless you have someone that has that dog under control with a very strong lead on it, I would be scared myself.
Yeah, so the future, Sean, would be what?
The future, I think we have to... any kind of a dog that's we have to look again at the breeds. We have the breeds, but the cross breeds we have to look at too now, and the mixtures. And I think some of those need to be put on the list as well. There are breeds like Rottweilers and Pit Bulls and all of that, and if you mix them, you can make something else. And so any kind of a mixture involving those, we'd have to look at. And I think we have to get serious about enforcement. This kind of thing, it's not a once off. It happens, and it happens, you know, fairly often with kids. So, I mean, if this was a kid playing with a gun, what would we think? It's essentially the same. The dog could kill that child. So I think stronger legislation, put the mixed breeds...
Well, enforced legislation, maybe.
Enforced legislation.
But I could be, correct me if I'm wrong, I think the mixed breeds are on the restricted list. Any breed that's mixed is included within that restricted list, and there are 11... dog breeds on the restricted list already. So is it not possible that we could look at the actual current act and follow on that instead of creating a new act?
Possibly. The other thing to throw into the mix is that dogs have different personality.
Absolutely.
We see that
yeah.
from science. That's been proven, you know. It's kind of like saying, if you say Rottweiler, are you kind of tarring all the you know, you might have gentle Rottweilers. So they, like humans, you can't say all Irish people are such and such. So that adds another layer of difficulty, or how the dog has been treated or abused as a child.
Well, again,
like humans, what do you do about that? That's why they get aggressive.
I mean, that goes back again to the owner's responsibility and how they treat the dog and how the dog is, the conditions of the dog and how the actually owner treats the dog. I mean, I've seen dogs that are, you know, normal Labradors, all these types of dogs, when I'm out walking in the mountains, and I've had incidents where dogs come out on the road, they're extremely aggressive. They may not be on the list of the restricted dog breeds, but they still are extremely aggressive, and they may think that I'm threatening them.
Yeah.
It's not a nice circumstance, or not a nice incident to have either with any dog.
Maybe an area in a park, say, for people who are afraid of dogs for obvious reasons, where there will be no dogs, like a dog-free area. So the dogs can be walked in a certain place, and then you can have another area where you're not going to meet dogs.
Should the dog have been put down, Tom?
I think if a dog attacks a child in the manner that was described, I think in that case the dog is unsafe. How can they guarantee that it won't happen again? And if a dog has done something like that and maybe thinks that it's okay, I think...
But there's an argument to retrain the dog. Do you think the dog is just inherently bad?
Well, the question I'd ask is it possible to retrain the dog? If the dog does something of that nature, is it? I would question that myself, I must say.
Yeah. Is it possible to retrain, Sean?
Well, again, think of, say, somebody who's grown up in a terrible environment, got involved in criminality like a human, and then do we try and retrain them? We do. Well, we put them in jail, but we're trying to retrain them as well. It's not easy. It's a long process. I wouldn't say it's impossible, but difficult. We could do it, but you'd have to put a lot of resources into it.
Yeah.
So if the dog, if we're not prepared to put the resources into it and the dog is dangerous, then I'd say it has to be put down.
Ian?
Yeah, I think that's a difficult. I've always had dogs, and now correct me if I'm wrong, I think I heard Pete the vet on during the week, and he was saying another argument, would it not be interesting to see why the dog behaved in that manner and learn from it? So that's another opportunity, another discussion that could be had as well.
Right, okay. Well, there you go. It's when you just think of the injuries that's been inflicted on
horrific.
That kid, you know.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
You know, just so bad. And what was he doing now? Playing football or something, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
The whole life has changed.
I know. So, yeah, the owners have to come into it. They need training as well.
Yeah,
the dogs.
Absolutely.
Indeed. Human to human this time, Leo Varadkar, the Taoiseach, in a conversation put on the spot as regards would he support Gardaí and Ireland being armed. So we have, and we take pride in it, and we have done from the foundation of the state, that we have a mostly unarmed Garda force. Or, in fact, we don't even have police in Ireland. We have guardians of the peace, I think is the the term. So we don't even have police. So is it time for a change in all this? What do you think, Tom? How's joint policing committees getting on in Wicklow?
It's actually one of the, I think, one of the very good committees that was put in place in recent years. Declan, my view on this is very straightforward. My answer would be no. I don't think it would be a great move. I think there's lots of other things that need sorting first. But one of the things that could help in this way, rather than kind of going the route that was discussed with the Taoiseach, will be to make the special forces section of the guards expand that and give them, put more manpower into it. Because really and truly, the bottom line here is the problem with law and order in the country at the moment is one of lack of resources. And every time it's discussed and every time it comes up for discussion, it's thrown out. And I think that's where the focus should really be. I mean, there should be a big, big focus on community policing and that whole area. I think that would lead into controlling petty crime and getting the Gardaí more involved in communities. And that would lead in then to being able to better control more serious crime. But I think putting a gun into every Garda in the country, I certainly would not be in favour of that. The other issue, Declan, with the resource thing and the Garda thing, in recent times, the Garda sections around the country have been put into kind of Wicklow and Wexford are now one big district. And I must say, I think that's a bad move. I think that what's happening is they're trying to put in management systems into on Garda Síochána, and I think they're outdated the way they're approaching it. They're looking at stuff that was done 30 years ago in business, and now they're trying to put it into the places like on Garda Síochána, and there's a lot of skill sets required to run that properly, and I think that's where the big problems are. So I say before putting guns or considering giving Gardaí guns, I think all those things need to be sorted, and sorted urgently, because it's a massive, massive problem.
Yeah, how are you resourced in the greater Greystones, Kilcoole area as regards Gardaí? What's the perception?
The perception is that we haven't got enough. And the way the Garda situation is structured at the moment, they work on five shifts. So you have X amount of guards and they're divided across five shifts, which means that in reality, each shift has a very limited amount of personnel. And it means that where you have community guards, they can be pulled off their community guard duty to do other duties. And that's understandable when a crime or something serious happens. But the bottom line is then that you have nothing on the ground. And for me, the biggest judgment is I could get into my car now and I could drive around Bray, I could drive into Greystones, Kilcoole, Newcastle, Delgany, all that whole area, and I probably wouldn't see a guard. And I think that's the bottom line. There's not enough visibility, there's not enough presence. And I would hear even that feedback from guards on the ground. And the big problem for a lot of the guards now is that they're changing all the systems and they're putting in these management ideas, and it's involving a massive amount of paperwork and reporting. And one guard said to me that they're spending an awful lot of time now, when something happens, filling out paper rather than getting on and getting the job done. So it really needs to be looked at very, very seriously. But guns is not the answer.
Right. On the Pure Project, we keep coming back to it, but rural and isolated farmhouses and houses and things like that, and crime. The Irish Farmers Association were telling us during the week that crime in Wicklow had diminished because of Gardaí were superb, whereas in other parts of the country it hasn't. What's the feeling in rural areas?
I think in rural areas a lot of people have the feeling that there is a lack of Gardaí in the area, and I also think that people living in rural areas, there is a huge element of the communities gathering around together, and they're isolated areas. However, I think it's quite difficult for some people in rural areas, especially for the elderly people who live there, and they may be in a situation where they are somewhat apprehensive about burglaries and attacks at night as well. But as Tom was saying there correctly, I don't know if arming the Gardaí is a solution to it. We've had a long history of the guards serving our country and the public in an unarmed way for a long period of time. We also have a guard armed support unit, which could be extended or even further funded. And at this moment in time, there are approximately, I could be wrong, about 19 countries in the world that don't have armed guards or armed police. Norway, Finland, our neighbours, the UK, excluding Northern Ireland. I lived in Italy for a period of time, and I always found it somewhat unusual to see the carabinieri and the guards over there with guns, and they'd come into cafes and pubs, and it was quite normal for the people there, but I always found it a little bit unnerving because I'm so used to seeing guards without guns.
Yeah, you get used to it though, I suppose. That
even
the local police, as opposed to the, like in Spain, the Guardia Civil, you'd expect them to have it because they drew out a paramilitary. But the local police still have guns.
But I don't think the GRA in Ireland have said that the rank and file guards would be for guns either.
No, indeed. Sean?
Oh, I'd be very much against it, and I would agree with the lads. I lived for 3 years in New York City in the 90s, and that was like law of the jungle in some respects. And it was very intimidating. We need less guns, not more guns. And I think what we have in Ireland is quite special, and I'd hate to see a change, because I think the cycle of fear then builds up, where we're talking about these dogs, people then get dogs themselves maybe to protect against the other dogs, there's more guns, and then they feel they have to get guns to protect themselves, so the whole thing gets ramped up and escalated, and it's a road to disaster, and I'd hate to see it happening here in Ireland. I think that some kind of a flying squad maybe of detectives or Scotland Yard or special branch, whatever, that are armed and can swoop in if needs be in a situation and have them roaming around. Yes, be in favour of that, but only those guys or girls, nobody else.
Something I want to mention, Tom, and it's somebody, because the Greater Greystones area is the passing this week. We had the very sad news of Garda Declan Lynch, who was a huge contributor to this programme over the years, from Greystones Gardaí and generally County Wicklow Gardaí. And it just came as a shock that somebody so young has passed away. And we want to obviously send out our sympathies and condolences to Magella and to Aaron and Emlyn, and the whole family. But it was a shock. And Declan, he retired, but he was still with us.
Yeah, absolutely, and I concur, Declan, and I'd like to extend sympathies also to Magella and the two lads. It's a very, very sad time and a very sad occasion. I know Declan a long, long number of years. When I got involved myself in local politics first, Declan, I used to meet Declan at all kinds of gatherings and functions, and we'd have all kinds of debates and arguments about different things. He was absolutely a very, very live character. I remember he was very involved in the Shoreline development before it became Shoreline in Greystones, of the fundraising. He spent years with a committee in Greystones fundraising. I remember knocking on his door on one occasion and having a big chat with him about it. They had picked up or collected something like 3 million. And he was very emotional about it and very, very, very passionate about it. And he had that kind of passionate approach. And I would have listened to him or heard him on your programme on numerous occasions from a community policing perspective, which he was absolutely big into. I know it's very, very sad. And as I say, we're all thinking of Magella and the lads today. His funeral's this morning. So may he rest in peace.
Indeed, great into photography as well.
That's right.
Yeah. It is the 11:05, and I just want to concur with that. We'll certainly miss Garda Declan Lynch. Just want to play something to you. It's a voice note from Pat on the subject of dogs.
All dogs should carry insurance, like any lethal weapon.
No, insurance for dogs.
Not a bad idea. Yeah. That's my first
reaction. Insurance for the owner on the dogs.
Yeah, or yeah. To produce it on the spot if needs be. And you just give the impression that this is something that's regulated and needs to be watched, and so people are not just thinking they can get away with anything. I think in good idea.
Right.
Yeah, there's nothing wrong with that. Yeah,
very good. Thanks for that, Pat. It's the 11:05 on East Coast FM.
WhatsApp or text East Coast FM now. 087-77-11-103.
Did you hear that? 20% off wine and champagne. And that? Irish beef sirloin roast. And stuffed cook-in-the-bag Irish chicken. Now 20% off. Spiced Irish beef is 20% off too.
Have you got any 10 off 50s?
And that's the sound of better value. Every week leading up to Christmas, there's new savings to be had. Dunnes Stores. Make Christmas for everyone. Terms and conditions apply. Voucher can be used on an next grocery shop of €50 or more. Voucher excludes alcohol. Please drink sensibly.
Trinity Volkswagen Wicklow invite you to their 231 pre-order event. Call to book your appointment and view Ireland's best-selling all-electric ID range, the latest compact SUVs, or the iconic Volkswagen Golf or Polo. Tomorrow comes with confidence. Explore the full range available for 2023 delivery. Search Trinity Volkswagen for more.
Volkswagen. Best-selling claim based on most recently published monthly figures.
Earlsbrook House, part of the First Care Nursing Home Group, is delighted to announce we are now welcoming new residents. Following the success of the vaccination programme, our residents enjoy exceptional, safe quality nursing care in the warm comfort of our beautiful Georgian home, located just a minute from Bray's beautiful seafront. This welcoming home is ideal for retired people to enjoy independence in a supportive environment and for respite and convalescence needs. Call us on 01513 6854 or visit firstcare.ie.
Crisp mornings, crunchy leaves, cozy jumpers. Wintertime can be magical. But it's also the time of year when we're most at risk of catching the flu. At your local pharmacy, children aged 2 to 17 can now get vaccinated for free with just a simple nasal spray. Don't let the flu stop you from enjoying your time together. Get your whole family vaccinated against the flu today. Your local community pharmacy. Always here for you. Brought to you by the Irish Pharmacy Union.
The Morning Show on East Coast FM.
The Morning Show.
With Declan Meehan.
Yes, the 11:05 on East Coast FM, and our guest this morning, Sean Duke, the cool scientist, Ian Davis from the Pure Project, and Tom Fortune, independent counsellor. And I want to ask you, Ian, you've got your calendar out. The Pure Project is a great success, isn't it?
This year was amazing, yeah. We had over 850 miles of roads, mountains, woodlands, valleys, forestries, upland amenities, car parks, pull-ins, and even a few coastal areas, and thousands of volunteers.
Well done.
Yeah, I don't know what you've left out there, but I'm sure there's something.
I left out all the funders, and while I'm here, I'd like to thank all the stakeholders of funders for continuing to fund and support the Pure Project.
Right, and making Wicklow look better.
That's the idea, working together to improve and enhance our environment.
All right, okay.
That's a great speech.
Now, a 4-day week trial amongst companies in Ireland has been deemed a success, with 100% of employees indicating that they preferred a reduced work schedule. And employers as well, they came on board with this, and they seem to be pleased. The 6-month coordinated trial took place earlier this year, seeing 12 Irish companies switch to a 4-day week with no reduction in pay for employees. So great in theory, but would you support it? Who'll take this one?
Sign me up. Yep. Yeah. Straight away, sign me up to 4 days a week. It sounds brilliant. I don't know how it would work for every company, especially small or medium companies within Ireland. I think it would be extremely difficult. However, as my wife said to me last night, why wouldn't it work? Just because we're used to 5 days, there's no reason why it wouldn't work. Just because you like to work 24/7, it doesn't mean other people like to work it. And I do agree with that. I mean, the whole concept of 5 days a week is relatively new. It's 19th century. Henry Ford was one of the main proponents for that. And he was really interested in doing it because it cut his costs. And it also meant that people had more time to spend money. So the 5 day week is not that long. It hasn't been in here for that long a time. It'd be interesting to see what those type of companies were, the 12 companies, to see what kind of companies they are. Are they big multinational companies? Are they like Google, Meta, Salesforce? I think if you have a large workforce, it would work very well for the employees, and I think it'd be great. If it does come in, I'll be the first person to sign up for 4 days. It would be great in theory. Yeah, in theory.
Yeah, but you'd get the same productivity, would you?
No, I wouldn't. No, I wouldn't be able to get everything done in 4 days. I shouldn't be saying that, okay. I doubt it very much. Yeah.
Okay, so you're probably not what they're thinking about.
They're not. No, yeah. Definitely not.
Okay, so
my wife would love to see it, though. Definitely.
Tom?
Yeah, Declan, it's an area I'm quite interested in and intrigued with. My take on it is that one size doesn't fit all. I think it depends on the job, and the research that they've done, we talked about reduced stress and burnout and sleep better and things like that. Again, I would say there that if you're in a role that you love, these kind of issues, that's why I say one size doesn't fit all. If you're in a role that you actually love, those situations don't generally arise. So my attitude to that, to the debate, is that the issue really is the things like the wrong job, poor management, and lack of challenge. It may kind of work in some roles, but then if you look at nurses and junior doctors, and the pressure, for example, to pick two that they're under, and they work lots of them work maybe 3 or 4 day kind of weeks based on 12-hour shifts, but the amount of stress and stuff they're under, so you have to look at the individual thing. And so I'm not convinced yet about that approach. I believe, Declan, just to make a couple of extra points, I believe the focus should be on things like working conditions, management styles, attitude, motivation, communication, and control of the whole area. And I think there needs to be a kind of a big sea change in the way companies are run. So would a 4 day just end up as in time the same as a 5 day when you're going to be up and running? So I don't think you should do a one size fits all, but there may be industries that it would suit.
And what's your dissatisfaction with employers?
My dissatisfaction is I think there's a generally with some employers, not all, there's an attitude problem. And the analogy I would use is customer care prior to the crash and prior to COVID and all that was a very, very important thing in the area of retail, for example. And in my observations of it, it's the customer care by and large now has generally disappeared. And I would say the very same thing about in the work environment. I think the attitude in the work environment has got a little bit less cuddly. And I think there's scope and lots of potential to get back into that. And I think it's management style. It's like anything you do in life, Declan, in my view. Attitude, to me, is 80% of it. After that, you need to have skills and you need to have expertise, and in some jobs you need to have a certain level of education. But it's all about attitude, and attitude has got to be nurtured, it's got to be encouraged, and it's got to be managed. And I think that's where the problem is in the work environment today.
Okay, Sean Duke. Sean, you know, I'll ask you from the scientific point of view, what are we cut out for?
It's a good question. I interviewed a guy actually from Maynooth who's an expert in this, Andrew Coogan, recently, and he's into this sleep cycle stuff, and he says it's completely crazy the way we have it set up, this 9-to-5 thing, because actually we have biorhythms, and our biorhythms are tuned into nature. And before we lived in this technological world that we're in now, you know, we woke with the sun and we went to sleep when it went down. And essentially that's how our body goes throughout the year. So for example, he said, I wouldn't tell it to my teenagers, but really there's not much point in teaching them before like 10 o'clock in the morning.
You know, and I said, should schools start at 10? And he says, journalists are always asking me that question, but probably they should, because, you know, they're not going to listen because of the kids' biorhythm. And when you're a teenager, it's a certain way. And when you get older, it changes, and then your sleep patterns change. So all of this stuff is very, very flexible and individual to people. So having everybody do the same thing is not really, even from a financial, economic point of view, doesn't really make a lot of sense. So I think we need to be more open on this. The Germans, who aren't known for being lazy, I don't think, they essentially do a 4.5 day week, because you know, at lunchtime they disappear, they're gone, and they go off and have beers in the afternoon if it's the summertime. But they manage to get everything into a 4.5 day week. So maybe we should allow people start with maybe a 4.5 day week, see how it goes, and maybe allow people to choose, like, if they want to come in at 10 o'clock, let's look at that. Even with schools, maybe look at it. Is that the right time to try to teach kids when they're just barely out of bed, 9 o'clock? Or is it a waste of time trying to teach them then? There's evidence to say it is. So, yeah, flexibility.
Okay. Flexibility, yeah. Okay, we're all agreed. But Ian, anyway, he was going to have a great time.
Yeah, right. I want 4 days.
All right, yeah. With us this morning on the 11:05, we're going to discuss Christmas in just a second. Christmas on the telly. Sean Duke is with us, the cool scientist. He writes as well, I think, Irish Times, but I've seen you in the Independent as
yeah,
well.
Yeah, doing
have I?
Both, yeah.
Yeah, oh, great, there he is.
Jumping between the two.
Very good. Ian Davis from the Pure Project and Councillor Tom Fortune.
At Ulster Bank, we have now begun to close current and deposit accounts. At this time, if your notice period and your deadline has passed, your account is now queued for closure. You must take action now. If you are still relying on your personal or business bank account and in need of support, please contact us immediately. Visit ulsterbank.ie, your local branch, or call 0818 210 260. Call costs may vary and calls from mobiles may not be free. Ulster Bank Ireland DAC is regulated by the Central Bank of Ireland.
Order your festive feast early this year and let Avoca take care of every little detail. The Christmas feast range is filled with delicacies from Ireland's finest producers, as well as handmade treats from the Avoca bakeries. With the best starters, mains, desserts and all the trimmings, make this year's Christmas meal one to remember. Find the festive feast brochure at avoca.com and order from your local store. A member of the team will be happy to help.
It's that time again. Time for your CVRT. Hit the road and head to the N11 CVRT and Service Centre in Newtown, Mount Kennedy. Book online, pay online with the experts in commercial vehicles, sales, testing and servicing. Paddy Connolly 4x4 at the Glen Garage. Our state-of-the-art N11 CVRT and Service Centre promises flexible appointments, speedy turnaround times and a designated office area with free Wi-Fi and refreshments while you wait. Book now at the glengarage.ie/CVRT.
Andrea, Matteo, and Virginia Bocelli together for the very first time on their brand new album, A Family Christmas. The Bocellis, A Family Christmas, out now.
Bargain Town's Black Friday sale has been extended until this Saturday, 3rd of December. Come in store and get your Black Friday bargain now. Bargain Town, first in Dublin for your furniture needs.
Hi, I'm Barbara and this is Crackagus Kiel on East Coast FM.
Stecha Blenochen, Erin Tochtulogan V, Noidegachtu Shacht, Antoron Evig Ivrehien, now full metal jacket. Abigail Mead, agus Nigel Goulding. Abigail Mead, bin pseudonym, a vieg Vivian Kubrick, inin Stanley Kubrick. A rinne naskunan, a clockwork orange, the shining, agus an kianis journey, eyes wide shut.
May I have the password, please?
Fidelio.
That's right, sir.
A vi dinta dzirach solowash a boss, ish shachtu nidig nachan lai. Fós an lá tanya hon ravilas a shachte a carta om ia hauna. Shid na horon is smoo, a vi na chlashtal na na classics. Michael Jackson, Thriller, on hochtozi.
Monster Mash on the Shaskadi.
They played the Monster Mash.
The Monster Mash.
Ghostbusters on the Hochtadi.
Sinead Krakogus Kill, East Coast FM.
The Morning Show on East Coast FM with Declan Meehan.
East Coast FM.
Morning Show at East Coast FM, and Sean, Ian and Tom are here just to give their thoughts on this, maybe a recommendation. Father Ted has been voted amongst the best Christmas TV moments, closely followed by Only Fools and Horses. But what's the favourite thing of our panel to watch at Christmas time? Anybody want to start off with this now? I see all the thinking hats are on.
I love Christmas movies, I have to say. And
like what?
Well, see now, there's three different types of Christmas themed movies, in my opinion. You have the Christmas themed movie, Santa, Elves, Reindeer, which are all good, but then you have movies that are set at Christmas time,
right,
and they're different. Like It's a Wonderful Life is my favourite, and then you have movies which are set at Christmas time but they don't really have a Christmas theme. Die Hard has to be one of those movies as well. And then you have Christmas movies which are shown at Christmas time but they've nothing to do with Christmas time, because if you think about it, I from the day when we had RT1 and RT2 and they had the big Christmas
that.
Movie, do you remember? And we'd all gather around on the couches. Dad had his couch, Mom had her couch, and we all, the kids, sat there waiting for the big Christmas movie. And the Christmas movie never had anything to do with Christmas. It was like
Sound of Music,
Raiders of the Lost Ark, you know, Indiana Jones, yeah, those type of movies, or Willy Wonka.
So what's your favourite thing? Yeah.
Oh, it's A Wonderful Life, has to
a
be.
A Wonderful Life, okay, let me move on. Tom?
Yeah, well, I absolutely love Christmas, Declan. I'm like a baby when it comes to Christmas time. I love the Father Ted, obviously, and I think the Fools and Horses is hilarious. But my movie voice for Christmas, what I love is, I love the Home Alone series, Die Hard, Love Actually, National Lampoon's Christmas Vacation. I think
all
that's
the predictable ones.
And Miracle on 34th Street.
The old version.
Yeah,
the old version, not the Dickie.
Yeah, yeah.
Even though Dickie was
absolutely
my boss at one stage, the original one. Yeah, James Stewart.
We have a tradition where it still remains hanging on by a thread in at home, my house, that every Christmas Eve I used to take the gang away for the day, give Anna a break, and we'd go and see Santa Claus, and we'd go to a movie. So we used to see all the Christmas movies. Nowadays I'm trying to beg one of them to come with me because they're now the same age as myself.
Sean?
Yeah, well, there's two. My kids are getting a bit older as well, which is sad in a way because they're on iPhones now, so they don't want to watch anything with you. But they do sit down and watch The Wizard of Oz.
Yeah.
You know, which is amazing considering 1939.
Yes, yeah.
And I think that's a masterpiece. I love it. And so they will watch that.
So all the little munchkins go
watch,
along.
Funnily enough, they'll watch Dumbo as well, which is kind of, even though they're 15, 13, you know, they won't tell their friends, but they like that one as well. So.
Right. Well, none of you have won the prize. The prize is Casablanca.
I was going to say it.
Sorry about that. You know, late at night when all the food is gone and all that sort of stuff, it's switch on Casablanca. Yeah. I'm trying to stay awake as well.
Great movie. It's great.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
I've watched it hundreds of times, but there you go. Anyway, thanks very much for coming in, guys.
Yeah, thanks, Declan.
Thank you, Declan.
A big happy Christmas to you.
And the very same to you.
Hope everything
we can say
goes
it now.
Well.
It's December. Happy Christmas.
Yeah. Yeah. Indeed. Yeah. And I was going to say something there. Something in the news this morning about the most stressful things at Christmas time. Deciding who to invite to Christmas dinner has been named as the most stressful thing about the festive season. Just over 42% say Christmas Day guest list is the chore they are most worried about. I thought it naturally happens with families. But anyway, 29% say their biggest headache is the turkey dinner, while 18% say they're most worried about the cost of Christmas shopping. That might rise this year.
The presents.
Indeed.
Yeah.
Yeah. What to get for my brother. Okay. That's another thing. Thanks for coming in, lads. Good morning.
Thank you, Declan.
Thank you.